あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
What's good, internet? Welcome to a Waypoint article read, which you do this from time to time, in which one of the members here at Waypoint reads an article that they wrote, and then afterwards we chat about it, and we chat about maybe the game they played or whatever. I don't know why I'm beating around the bush, because today we are going to hear Patrick Klepek read his review of Spider-Man, the new PS4 action-adventure open-world game called Spider-Man by Insomniac Games. The name of his review, the title of his review was Spider-Man Isn't Just Good, It's a Game About Trying to Be Good. It is truly the be good or be good at it of video games. There's Patrick laughing. Patrick, read the review. Patrick, hey Patrick.
Okay.
Read the review.
Got it.
We'll be right back after Patrick reads, and we'll talk about the game. If you want to hear my impressions and hear us chat about some of the points he makes in the review, stick around after the review to hear us do that.
Every day is a new shit show. It always feels like the world is on fire with no end in sight. Wait, what happened on Twitter? Hey, did you read that infuriating article in the New York Times? No, not that one. The other one. What did he do today? Who got hurt? Is there anything I can do about it? Where should my time, money, and emotional energy be focused today? It's tiring and can often feel hopeless. What can one person really do? And if we had the power to make a difference, would we even know what to do with it? It's moments like this when we look for symbols and stories for direction, and often escape. This is a big reason Spider-Man, as an icon, has proven so endearing. Peter Parker represents the best possible version of us, an aspirational slice of humanity, someone who, whatever the consequences, does the right thing for the greater good, a middle-class nobody who became superhuman and uses that power to help people. Parker is not perfect, and his desire to see the best in everybody is often his downfall, but he's trying. And because he is overworked, underpaid, and struggling to make sense of his place in a world on fire too, it's easy to see ourselves in Spider-Man, or at least the version of ourselves we might wish to be. Spider-Man, the latest game from Ratchet & Clank developer Insomniac Games, understands this core tenet of its central character, and it's what makes the game sing. Spider-Man is touching, thrilling, and at times dark, but not grim dark. All the while, it never forgets Spider-Man's humanity, his capacity for empathy, and the stubborn ideological hang-ups constantly undermining his goals. There is a long list of bad superhero games, and fans have come to accept a never-ending pool of mediocrity. It's a way for companies to extract money from fans wondering if maybe, just maybe, this time would be different. Cynicism was well-earned. Often such games were cash grabs, given as much time and effort as a cheap toy on the shelf. It's why the release of Rocksteady's Batman Arkham Asylum was so groundbreaking. Arkham Asylum was a good game and a good Batman simulator. It was an experience that understood what makes Batman, Batman. He doesn't exist without the man in the mask, Bruce Wayne. Spider-Man's had better luck with video games than most, with 2004 Spider-Man 2 one of the better attempts, largely due to how much fun it was to swing around. But until now, no one's really grappled with Peter Parker, the character's human grounding. What does it mean to be a nobody with superpowers? How would that change your life? It'd probably screw things up, wouldn't it? Thankfully, Spider-Man manages to tackle those questions in an Arkham-like manner, while still carrying forward the focus on traversal that has made some past Spider-Man games so memorable. In fact, the two things that most carry Spider-Man are joyful swinging and its big heart. The former is, bar none, the most fun I've had exploring a game space since Mirror's Edge. Insomniac's made it very easy to spot swingable points in the environment without overwhelming the screen with big, ugly icons. And as your skills improve, swinging becomes instinctual, and the cues melt away. It's overwhelming at first, but within an hour or so, you'll be soaring from rooftop to rooftop, diving off skyscrapers, running along walls, and squeezing between buildings, cackling the whole way. Spider-Man eventually unlocks fast travel options, but it was only in the final hours when the end was in sight and my writing deadline was nearing that I ever used them. Even 20 hours in, it was more fun to trapeze across the map, snagging collectibles along the way. And there are a lot of collectibles. More on that later. Bearing something lovingly unexpected, I'll never know what it's like to actually be Spider-Man, but this game gets awfully close, and what more can you ask from a superhero game? Pro tip, it's possible to simply hold R2, which automatically swings Spider-Man from point to point. But time spent learning the advanced maneuvers is totally worth it, as they provide a deeply satisfying level of specificity to Spider-Man's aerial moves. If this is all Spider-Man accomplished, that'd be fine. Better than expected, even. But what makes Spider-Man whole is how the mechanics go hand in hand with the story it's telling. This version of Spider-Man picks up years into the job, and like Marvel's most recent cinematic outing, presumes you know the origin story. So, warning, this contains some minor spoilers about the story sensitive you said about that stuff, so careful, watch out, etc. The game doesn't spend hours setting up Spider-Man. When Uncle Ben died, or why Mary Jane is an important person in Peter's life, this is an experienced superhero who knows how to fight and has seen loss. It has some interesting wrinkles, too. Peter and Mary Jane have broken up. His day job is no longer a photographer of the Daily Bugle. Instead, he's helping out Dr. Otto Octavius, the man who's become Peter's father figure since Ben passed, building some experimental new technology. Of course, me, a smarty pants, figured this meant Dr. Octavius was quickly going to become one of Spider-Man's central foes. Spider-Man, an intellectual, counters with an early scene where it seems like everything's gone wrong and a supervillain will be born, but nothing happens. It's one of many narrative headfakes Spider-Man deploys, moments that work because they betray our low expectations for stories and games, let alone superhero ones. Otto is a real character, not a plot device, and the audience's understanding of Otto's fate shades one of the many close, well-developed relationships in the game. By spending meaningful time with him and the other people in Peter's life, it builds credible relationships and credible stakes. The best superhero stories work because there's an emotional investment in everyone's arc. Even the villains. See Killmonger in this year's Black Panther, a character who, by the end, not only figured had a point, but might actually have been right. This is true of Otto, Mary Jane, Aunt May, and yes, even Miles Morales, a character who is more than a cameo for hardcore fans of the comics. Peter's supporting cast is given more to do than show up in cutscenes and cheer Spider-Man on, and support important narrative undercurrents. For one, making the world a better place is a communal effort, not a one-spider show. The other people in Peter's life, especially the women, often exist to give Spider-Man someone to save just in the nick of time. Here, though, Aunt May is a chief administrator at a homeless shelter, one trying to better the lives of New York's least seen people. When Spider-Man saves the world, that's great, but stopping the Scorpion doesn't exactly fix income inequality. Spider-Man's pursuits get splashed all over the front page of newspapers and TV, but it's not the hard, thankless job of helping someone fill out the right paperwork so they can hopefully get a job. In Spider-Man, Peter spends his free time volunteering at the shelter, chopping vegetables, cleaning clothes, catching up with the regulars. A few have stories that develop over time. Spider-Man doesn't come with policy prescriptions, but in making Peter's home base a shelter rather than a workshop to make gadgets, it reinforces a larger message not often seen in games like this. Real change usually comes from the bottom up, and it's not easy. The game backs up its humanity in smaller ways, too, whether it's cleaning up spills in the shelter for no reward, letting a stranger rest their head on your shoulder while you take the subway, or taking a selfie with someone you've rescued. Spider-Man is a, quote, man or woman of the people sort of character, and the game constantly finds ways to reinforce this virtue. Spider-Man isn't a visual novel with swinging elements, though, and the rest of the game is less successful. Supporting its desire to bring folks off the sidelines of storytelling, for example, some characters are given the occasional interactive sequence. These moments, while well-intentioned, are frustrating, underdeveloped, and almost always stealth-focused. They're also mercifully short. The Arkham-like combat is given new life by Spider-Man's speed and verticality, but quickly becomes clear there's no real reason to engage with some of the higher-level mechanics and gadgets outside of wanting to look cool, which you do. The same goes for the specialized power-ups associated with each suit and the augments you can assign to Spider-Man over time. I found myself playing around with them in the beginning, only to settle on a few useful ones a few hours in and ignoring everything else after that. Outside of some combat-specific side missions, the game never pushed me hard enough or presented enemies that truly required me to rethink my strategy. Combat starts out thrilling, but eventually I was phoning it in. The side missions, though, are mostly a mess from the start. Spider-Man, again, follows the Arkham model of stuffing Spider-Man's encounters with a wider rogue gallery into these optional quests. While it's kind of fun to track down a toy hidden by Black Cat once or twice, or tackle a time-based bomb challenge from Taskmaster a handful of times, it's far less enjoyable the 12th time. The main story isn't overly long, 12 hours or so, so the game tries to beef things up by stuffing the world with lots of trinkets and minigames. I'll admit to collecting way more of the 55 hidden backpacks than I figured I would, but that's owed more to being endlessly enchanted with swinging around the world. It's why I did every challenge involving chasing a super fast pigeon, too. I'm serious. Every time the game leaned on making me do something interesting or challenging with web-slinging, I was there. Fighting the 20th base with waves of enemies? Nah. The quests themselves aren't bad, really, but there's too many of them, and it becomes a slog to start filling out everything there is to do. I flirted with 100%ing the game, but the objectives I'm left with right now, I avoided on purpose. I'm good, actually. It's frustrating, then, because the game's upgrade trees are gated by participation in these side missions. Want a specific suit based on your favorite version of Spider-Man? You might have to wander around and wait for randomized crimes to populate around New York, and hope you nab one that drops more than a single crime token. There are a lot of different currencies the game doles out, and it would have benefited from streamlining. What at first is one of the game's strengths becomes a sour source of repetition. One positive side note, though. Each suit has a specific power, and it's really cool. The game lets you apply that new power to any other suit, so you can just pick your favorite. The small moments stick with me, though. Mary Jane doesn't put up with Peter's shit, and instead of crawling back because that's what Spider-Man's girlfriend is supposed to do, she does her own thing. And succeeds. At one point, Peter outright calls someone a fascist for being, well, a fascist. J. Jonah Jameson hosts an Alec Jones-like radio show to spout his conspiracy theories about Spider-Man. And like Jones himself, his fear-mongering is occasionally correct-ish, just often enough for him to be dangerous. It's a character played for laughs, but one with some notably disturbing real-life overtones. It's all refreshingly pointed, especially in a game that, despite being set in New York, seems to avoid any reference to the pseudo-fascist currently in the White House. Don't take the mention of fascism as an indication that Spider-Man is overly political. I mean, Spider-Man, he has an ideology, one that frustratingly presumes over and over that people deserve another chance, that forgiveness and empathy are necessary in every situation. Too often, Peter defers to the institutional powers around him, hoping they'll do the right thing. They usually don't. In the game, people die because of these choices, his presumptions, and cowardice. The game doesn't spend much time overly engaging with this notion. In a lot of ways, naivete is foundational to the character. But it's nonetheless striking when Peter ignores the evidence in front of him to the danger of the city he professes to love and protect. Not everyone is good. It's pragmatic Obama-era gullibility. Always assume the other side is acting in good faith. It'd be refreshing to see whatever story comes next take note of this. It's common to finish a game and be excited about the prospects of a sequel. This is true for Spider-Man, too, but for different reasons. Sure, there are the obvious weaknesses to improve upon, but importantly, I want to see what happens next with Peter and the people around him. There are some surprisingly bold storytelling decisions in Spider-Man, especially relative to what happens in this genre, and I'm invested in seeing the inevitable fallout. It helps, obviously, that Spider-Man was tremendously fun to play, too. The future of superhero games, at least in this corner of the universe, is not only bright, but interesting. I did not expect to be saying that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back. So, Patrick, you like this game a whole bunch. I feel like, you know, while there are definitely some small things that made you have maybe some second guesses around kind of the bombardment of collectibles and side quests and activities and maybe some of the less than stellar combat moments, by and large, you left this feeling super positive. Fair to say?
Yeah, I think there were sort of like two questions in front of a game like this was, you know, how do you handle Peter Parker, especially at a time when in the cinematic universe of Marvel, like, they have, like, a really interesting, relevant, like, young take on Peter Parker. And so it was I was curious to see where they, like, riff or don't riff on that, and then sort of, like, where they landed with that character, specifically given in the pantheon of comic book games and even in Spider-Man, who's been treated a little fairer in terms of the quality of games over the years. There's been a whole lot of characterization with Peter Parker and sort of the people around him and the Rogue Gallery, so I was curious about that, and then...
Yeah, there's, like, you get, like, the bullet points of Peter Parker in most of the games, where it's like, okay, he cares about power and responsibility.
Right.
He cares about Aunt May and MJ and Harry. It's like people in his life he cares about, he thinks that he has to do good. And that's kind of,
a setup. It's a premise to go fight a bunch of supervillains and, you know, beat some fools up and have some crummy stealth sections. In some ways, this Spider-Man keeps that tradition going forward.
There are definitely some stealth sections.
Yeah. And the other part was the swinging, right? Like, this is sort of when people think about comic book games in general. Like, prior to Batman Arkham Asylum coming on the scene, the sort of, like, comic book game that people pointed to was, like, 2004's Spider-Man 2, which was... In Another World, Another Life, made by Treyarch, who is now a premier Call of Duty developer, but they dip their toes into all sorts of different games, including licensed stuff, because Activision was producing those games back then. And actually, Activision made one of the other pretty decent ones, Shattered Dimensions, I think that's...
Shadow Dimensions is one I think people like.
Yeah, I played one and liked it a fair bit, too. But again, it was like a fairly... It was also, like, a very constrained, like, it wasn't a whole, like, you were swinging in, like, very, like, limited boxes. It was more about, like, swinging around in, like, contained spaces. It wasn't a big open world thing. And the 2004 version had big for the time, open world that you were kind of making your way through. And so I think this version, Insomniac's take, sort of nails both of those. I mean, I think I mentioned in the review that it's the most fun I've had in, like, exploring a space since probably Mirror's Edge, the sheer feeling.
The moving through it and finding your route.
Which is, like, sort of different than, like, the game feel thing we talk about, where, let's take Dead Cells, right? Like, I think there are, like, it'd be hard-pressed to find a game that I, like, is more, like, just feels fucking good to just, like, move a character from, like, across the screen. Like, it's very precise. And Spider-Man's, you know, aiming for something different, at least in the swinging, because it's a lot looser. It's fluid and momentum.
Yeah. It feels so much like swimming to me. Swimming in the ocean specifically. Where, like, you know, partly it's you, but partly it's the environment, and there's stuff pulling on you and kind of pushing on you based on, like, where your web has attached. Because, you know, it's funny because I realize now that there are listeners to the show who maybe did not grow up with those Spider-Man games the way we did. But, like, you know, there was a big controversy going into Spider-Man 3, the video game, based on the movie, that was, like, does the web swinging actually connect to anything, or does it just look like it's connecting to things? Unlike Spider-Man 2, where it definitely connected to physical objects. So you shot a web up, and it was like, yes, I'm connecting to this building to do this swing.
It fakes it in a way that feels authentic.
Right, yeah, exactly. It probably doesn't actually... it's not physics working that way, but it fakes it in a way that made it feel right. I might be misremembering parts of that, but those are the conversations that we were having at the time, you know, like, what was, like, and here it feels like it works. It feels like it's actually doing the thing, you know.
If you go to a park, place with no big buildings around you, you're not going to... So the main way that you interact with the world when you're swinging is holding R2, and that just, like, has... Spider-Man just, like, spamming these like, big swings that you're going left to right, and you can sort of slowly navigate your way through the world. It's not the most efficient, it's not the fastest, but you could conceivably just hold R2 and not interact with any other mechanics and make your way through, except when you find yourself in situations like if you go over the water, because there are times when you're, like, you're going to go near a bridge, you're going to have to go near sort of, like, the edges of the space that you're in, and, like, you're surrounded by water, and you find yourself near water, you're not going to be able to use that mechanic. You're going to have to, like, rely on one of the other ones where you actually end up aiming at a specific sort of space in the world that is marked by a small white circle when you choose to engage with that mechanic. But eventually you sort of pick up on where those spots are, and you no longer need to rely on the UI. And, like, that's sort of where, like, once I was, like, figuring out those ways of where you're marking a spot, like, sitting down and you're hitting, there's an upgrade where you hit X at the right time, and then you do, like, this boost
got that in my playthrough. Oh, yeah, it's so good.
Like, once you get that timing down, you're then able to string together not only like holding, you end up not even holding R2. You're just like tapping R2 to like, you know, give yourself like a spot to like spit, like, and then you'll start throwing yourself, you know, high into the air, doing dives,
doing tricks. Do you do tricks a lot? I do tricks constantly.
Yes. Yeah. There's another upgrade you can get that you, get you a small amount of XP, but it's mostly meant to just like make you look baller as hell, but like you can be doing just like twists and turns and all the acrobatic things that are often relegated to the cutscenes in games, where it's like seeing a character, you know, swing around a building and do a somersault. Like, that's just not usually what the game gives you control over. And in this case, you're not like inputting a specific button press to like do a somersault. You're like just holding an analog stick and rolling in different directions. But it's still like, especially in those moments where you're just going from point A to point B and you're not really doing anything along the way, the game is constantly giving like very playful and like layers of mechanics to interact with that make just the sense of going through a place like very pleasurable, both on a aesthetic level, like it just looks gorgeous to swing your way through this world, like it is a very pretty game, but on a mechanical level, I found it to be like deeply satisfying to be rotating between just like slowly making my way along or doing like very specific setups that have me like, you know, I'd even be mapping out in my head where it's like, all right, I'm like putting an expert level course in front of me where it's like, okay, I could like just go around it this way, but like I'm gonna swing through these two buildings, like make my way around. And as you sort of like gain skills, you gain the ability to do stuff like that in a way that, you know, over the course of the 20 or so hours that I played, I found to be like, I was still thinking about it. It's still something I found pleasurable, and for something that is largely just about moving through the space, like it is core to the game, but at the same time is not core to like the story. You know what I mean? Like most of the stuff you're doing in the story, it like doesn't have to do with swinging around. There are moments of it, but it's largely...
There are moments of it, but even those chases tend to be, have more wiggle room than you'd ever need to be perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's definitely like, oh, I'm chasing this helicopter. I mean, this was the E3 demo last year, not this year, but the year before.
Right.
Spider-Man chasing this Mr. helicopter.
Negative.
Right, exactly. Sequence. And you end up kind of getting close enough to then hit a couple button prompts and then you've won that thing, or, you know, you go into a quick time sequence or something like that. But the actual chase is, you know, I know this because I could just hold down R2 and advance to the place at which the chase needed to end versus using all of my tricks and getting as close as I could, but it's still always pulling away, you know? That stuff was, I kind of wish there had been more open world swingy stuff in the main story. Again, I'm not done. I'm probably 8 hours in, 6 hours in. I'm past kind of I definitely passed the first act, is what I'll say. I guess to kind of speak to the other side of this, we kind of made the comparison to Spider-Man 2 in terms of the importance of it feeling good to move around the world. And I think it's made good advances from the Spider-Man 2 locomotion system, to be clear. It's obviously a completely different game in that respect, but it's one that feels the way I remember that game feeling in the best possible way of just like, I feel so free. But I will say that the other side of this is I definitely was struck, especially with the opening act, how much this felt like a game from another age in its basic structure. Like, it's a video game-ass video game. There's collectibles everywhere. There's side quests everywhere.
It's a Ubisoft game after Ubisoft ditched a lot of, like, its like the way it does open worlds, you know, down to there's, you know, a gimmicky collectible that you these police signal things that you have to hack
there
and
are towers.
Fix
there are
in
towers.
Order to mark new things on your map.
Even just to reveal the map of those locations, right? I mean, it's I don't know that it's frustrating. It was the first time that I've ever felt like that era of games was something that a studio could think about as being retro or being like a, like it feels like like this team sat down and said, we want to make a sequel to Spider-Man 2 with all of the like, again, collectible icons and upgrade trees. Like it feels like such of a time in games in a weird way. Not that there aren't upgrade trees, right? Not that like Far Cry 5 didn't have multiple upgrade paths or whatever, because it did, but there was just something about the way the combat feels, it also feels like an Arkham game, obviously, in terms of its combat style, maybe a little faster than those games are, but most of the stuff that it feels like ingenuity to me is in its use of story stuff is in the way it looks and the way the swinging feels, not so much the basic structure. Did that hold you back at all, or does that make you – did that – especially in a year that's like something like God of War, which I feel like a lot of people felt was making some new changes, making some new steps in terms of just general gameplay design stuff. Did the kind of like oldness of the basic structure here like strike you at all?
The formula didn't bother me as much as like the things they filled the formula in with, like unlocking the map with these towers. Like, it's maybe half an hour of your time, like if you were just to like string them all together. So it's not, you know, we're not talking about a huge time investment. And but the my problem largely had to do with the fact that the quests themselves that you're going on, that what you're filling out, the objectives that you suddenly are allowed to do, just aren't that satisfying or interesting or meaningful and don't seem to, you know, often what you want from, and it sounds like you wanted some more of this, you know, you're, you know, only 8 hours in, but like this is not going to meaningfully change by the end of the game and your time with it, is you would hope you want some side objectives to like really pull on parts of the mechanics and force you to do things in a manner that are interesting or different.
I guess that's
weird.
What I want.
But I also want stuff that's like genuinely unique, and I just don't feel like that stuff's in there either. Like, I don't think it necessarily accomplishes the mechanical pull, and I think it also does a poor job. Like, the basic setup for a lot of the side quests, if they aren't sort of a time-based, like, bomb challenge or things of that nature, they do the Arkham thing of, hey, like, Spider-Man has a huge, like, and really interesting rogue gallery in which there are all sorts of villains that aren't in the story, but we want to nod at them and, like, do little, like, Easter eggs and things like that. And it just does, like, a bad version of that, where it's just the things you're going on are very rote and boring. And it's like the first time you see Black Cat, or even meet Black Cat, you find these
like
things where you like
bobblehead, like a cat.
Yeah, these little puzzles where you're just like scanning an area in front of you in first person until the controller vibrates. Then you zoom in and you take a photo of a bobblehead, and it's like cute once, but like not cute the 13th time. Right. And then it's a little bit weird when you see like today, as the reviews are going up and the game comes out in a couple of days, like there's a trailer for Black Cat. So it's like, go pay for the DLC and actually go see Black Cat, which, you know, I'm sure there are all sorts of like understandable reasons like why production works out that way. And it may be the case that they got like halfway through and we're like, actually, like we'd love to do something with the Black Cat character. And it's not, I'm not arguing that they cut that from the game and then are charging for it. But I will say the fact that what you actually want is the DLC rather than the side quest stuff speaks to sort of the rote and sort of boring nature of
so
a lot
much
of the
of
open
that stuff.
World stuff. And well, I think it has so much to do with Insomniac's never built a game like this before.
Right,
so
totally.
My guess is I interpret sort of like the repetitive and like largely boring nature of the open world is reflective of a team figuring out how to build that. And rather than reinventing the wheel, they went with an established formula that, yes, feels like a throwback, but works and like gave a template to like build on. And it's one of the things where like I think Spider-Man, like, its greatest weaknesses are things that seem easily solvable in a future game.
Sequel.
And like
the
things that are hardest, I think, are stuff that they managed to pull off.
Right. 100%. I think that stuff like making me care about Peter Parker is like, is a tough thing to do, and I think that they did that pretty well here. I played each of those Arkham games except for Origins, which I hear is actually better than it got credit for.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
And I, you know, grew up playing Spider-Man 2 and other superhero games that tried to do that formula. And it, you know, it makes me curious about the structure of open world superhero games. Because I think this gets something right that I've always complained about the Arkham games, right? Which is, I've always been frustrated by the Arkham, not by Arkham Asylum, which was only in Arkham Asylum, but once it got out into the world of Gotham, there was always some contrivance for why that space did not have people in it. In Origins, it was that it was snowy, which is maybe the least good excuse. Arkham Knight, it was like, you know, there was like, or Arkham City, there was like part of the city had been blocked off and turned into a giant prison complex. And I forget what it was in Arkham Knight, because it was definitely all of Gotham again, but there was just never any civilians in it. It never felt like a city to me. I was never convinced why Batman cared about the city. And I think this game does a slightly better job, not only with the fact that, like, you can high-five civilians and, like, do thumbs up at them, which is part of it, and there's cutscenes of people, you know, when you do fast travel, Spider-Man on the subway and people resting their heads on his shoulder and stuff like that. All that stuff helps a lot. But also just narratively, the game is so much about New Yorkers looking out for each other, or people who are part of the city infrastructure or part of services, like filling in the gaps for city infrastructure. Aunt May and another major character work at a place called Feast, which is a homeless shelter. And you're constantly just interacting with people who live in the city and who are, you know, regular civilians, regular folks. I mean, Spider-Man himself, you know, there's an entire arc of Spider-Man, of Peter Parker not having the money to pay rent. And I love, there's a mission where because of that, he loses some of his stuff and he has to deal with this one sanitation worker who he like keeps calling up to be like, hey, where does this truck that services this block go? You know, I have the number, I checked the dumpster, and you need to like run around and try to track down this the stuff, like where his, he's looking for like a backpack basically that has like a spider computer in it or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Like the actual like specifics are like less interesting.
Who cares? What's important
it's like,
is
it's a pretty basic mission that is given like emotional
so
thrust
much character.
Because of the character.
One, because I know what it's like to like be broke and not be sure you're going to make rent, which actually changes the feeling of Peter Parker, this person who has lots of physical power, a lot, because suddenly he's like, I should go crash on MJ's couch. Oh, fuck, right? Like, we're broken up. This is going to be an awkward conversation. Can I really go to my ex and be like, can I sleep on your couch? That feels weird. She's had a busy day. And, like, all of that stuff made this game feel like – we've talked about the dad game a lot. This felt like the first big AAA young adult game. Mm-hmm. And notably, I mean, it's a young adult game primarily focused on, like, a cis white straight dude in Peter Parker. But it still felt like the sort of, like, all right, you don't know where you're not sure where rent's going to come from. You care about all these people. You don't know how to, like, really manage your – you're coming into your own as an adult, but you're not 100% sure if you can trust your gut when it comes to personal relationships sometimes. You don't want to put too much pressure on, like, your parental figures, but also you're not quite stable by yourself. And I think we're going to see more and more of those games in the future in the same way that we've seen a lot more dad games in the future. And even this game makes some nods, as you note, about like you do, there are times at which MJ feels like a character in her own right, separate from Spider-Man. She is not just like a damsel to be rescued. She's doing stuff on her own. You know, Aunt May in the same way is someone who cares about the world and is doing stuff. And that stuff is a huge part of why New York works for me in this game, even though in the open world, it's just kind of filled with random crimes and backpacks to collect. You know, like having the sanitation worker who starts by being annoyed by you calling him, then pivots to actually calling you back to be like, oh, hey, kid, I just remembered the sanitation workers you're looking for, the guys who drive that truck.
Buy a pizza place. Which pizza place?
Which pizza place?
Then they go through like eight different pizza places talking about like why they like those different ones along
it's
the way.
Very good. And then there's a capper on that. I don't know if you noticed this. There's an in-game fake Twitter, which I think it means Spider-Man name searches. It's hard for me to tell. but he, the sanitation worker, posts and is like, oh, this must be some smelly kid downtown, because someone just called me like four times trying to find a dumpster. And that was an extremely funny way to cap that off. Their fake Twitter is really good. If you didn't read any of that stuff.
I forgot to keep checking it. I wished the game had somehow surface that stuff in like the main UI, because often I was only going into the options to like mess with my upgrade trees and things like that, and like quickly check the map, and I would just forget to look the Twitter, because there's a lot of really good writing in there.
There's a lot of really good writing in it, and there's a lot of really good like, yeah, this is Twitter. I know this. I recognize the way that this phrase, like someone who calls themselves human trash, you know, someone who...
It's written by people who clearly live on Twitter, as opposed to just like writing random things and assigning it to a social media service. Like, these people are aware of some of the tropes and memes and just mannerisms, like the like Tumblr-esque like approach to humor that people have on a place like Twitter.
There was did you see the and we can talk about how this game does and doesn't get political, but I shared that one screenshot with you and the rest of the Waypoint crew of the God, was it the mayor? It was, here it is. I found it. It's from Arthur J. Says, the charges against my client are lewd, lascivious, salacious, and outrageous. Wilson Fisk is an innocent man. And some Mitchell Stone replies, Fisk employees leveled half a city block when the police came to arrest him. Doesn't seem that innocent. And Arthur J. responds, no proof. None at all. Nothing connects Wilson Fisk to the men who engage in violence. Fake news. And there's lots of, there's no Trump analog directly here, I wouldn't say. But there certainly is a great deal of the feeling of New York City being beset upon by corrupt politicians and billionaires who want to get their way with the world, regardless of whether or not it's the legal way of going about it. You kind of touched on this in your review, right? You say that, like, hey, Spider-Man doesn't specifically call out Trump necessarily, but there is this notion of what it means to be good and what it means to have an infrastructure, you know, what it means to have a city.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, part of what makes the Peter Parker character work in this one, especially by grounding him in, like, rather than going back to your apartment and making fancy gadgets,
right.
You know, your the hub areas, like the place, the touchstone, the place you come back to, you know, a dozen times throughout the game and can obviously go back to on your own, but, you know, the place the story is constantly bringing you back to is Feast, like, is this shelter.
Right.
And, like, it's such in such stark contrast to, like, the splashy stuff that gets, you know, Spider-Man noticed by, you know, this Alex Jonesian, you know, version of J. Jonah Jameson, which is a really fun, interesting way for that character to kind of, like, reach a certain logical conclusion for how he's depicted in other Spider-Man media. But, like, to just show, like, you know, oh, like, the actual hard work of, like, getting someone a job, you know, filling out the paperwork. Like, that's not accomplished by defeating the Scorpion. Like, it's cool that, like, the buildings
cool
aren't falling,
the Scorpion,
falling
right.
because of that. But, like, income inequality, like, isn't fixed. Like, the systems not being in place to, like, help people, like, pay for food, like, that isn't fixed by Spider-Man, as flashy as he may be. And so having Peter Parker play both those roles or participate in both those roles or recognize, like, the limitations of the alter ego is fascinating, and I was happy to see that the game constantly returned to that as sort of a core tenet of, like, who this Peter Parker is, like,
yeah.
and that's where it got me thinking about sort of, like, the larger, like, you know, as I mentioned, like, it's not a game that is explicitly, you know, capital
no.
P political, but, like, superheroes have, like, a way of looking at the world. Like,
well, there's baggage with lots of superheroes
baggage,
around this.
They have an ideology, they have a perspective, and all of that is political in, you know, it's not go to Congress politics, but it is political in how we, like, view the world, like how Spider-Man exercises his power. And so I found the game to be, like, really interesting in the way that, and this is not new to, you know, Spider-Man stories, like the idea that, like, Peter Parker and by extension Spider-Man are, like, deeply naive and constantly overly trusting of other people, like, to, you know, the defer to institutional powers, allowing, you know, horrible people to, like, continue to have second, third, fourth, fifth chances. Like, that is in some ways cyclical to how comics are built, because you can't kill characters. They have to come back. But I do think it is consistent with Peter Parker and Spider-Man's sort of approach to the world is, like, always deferring on the side of less censure as much as, like, I added this line after you finished editing my review, because I was trying to sort of, like, sharpen this, was, like, it's like a very Obama-era pragmatic, like,
oh,
good 100%. Faith politics. Like,
yes.
Peter Parker is, and reminds me a lot of both myself in the Obama era and my belief in, like, Obama's approach to politics and how Obama practiced his politics, where it was always assuming the other
great
side
uniter,
is
man.
In some
yeah.
way acting in good faith, but then constantly being undermined by people who act in bad faith and take advantage of that. And that is Peter Parker, like, to a T, and is especially, like, the way different things play out in this story, the way there's all sorts of, like, interesting fallout and consequences. Like, I think the story is I don't want to, like, be hyperbolic, but it is, I think it makes some bold storytelling choices that I did not expect
right.
for largely relative for a game like this. And yeah, I think it, like, it really riffs on Peter Parker's sort of, like, core ideology and shows consequences for those actions, because often his sort of belief in the good of people turns into a kind of hubris that actually puts the people around him and the city he's, like, quote-unquote loves and protects, like, in danger constantly, when if he you know, made different decisions, there could potentially be different outcomes.
Totally. Well, and I think, like, even beyond that, with Spider-Man, one of the things, obviously, re-editing your review made me think a lot about the Arkham games again. And thinking about the way in which Batman solves problems. And obviously, Batman has his own fair share of both rogues and also allies in his corner, so it's not like he never is contending with other people. But so often, a problem comes up, and the revelation is that Batman always had a backup plan on the Batplane. If only I can go now, I have to climb this building to connect right. to the Batplane and get my anti-concrete gun or whatever the fuck it was. You know what I mean? Like, right. that is the solution. And in fact, with Bruce Wayne in general, the solution is I'm Bruce Wayne. I have infinite money and can provide for myself. And Spider-Man can't be that. Like, Peter Parker is a broke research assistant. I've been a research assistant. Research assistants don't get paid much. I don't know how he's living anywhere in Manhattan at all, even in the kind of garbage studio apartment I guess he has. But at the same time, the other side of it, so it's one side, right, is like Spider-Man as average Joe, right? Spider-Man as someone who makes as much money as you do, player who bought this for $60. Like, I don't know that Peter Parker could afford to buy the game Spider-Man in this game.
Right? He certainly not on a PlayStation 4 Pro. He's not playing 4K.
Certainly not. He got a
He's probably watching a YouTube stream of it, honestly.
He's definitely watching a YouTube stream on a phone with a cracked screen, you know? And I think that's really cool. On the other hand, I do think that, like, because it's just a video game as video game, you know, you go to your gadgets menu and you upgrade your gadgets because you have 3 crime tokens or whatever.
Right.
I don't want Spider-Man cart life necessarily, but I would have loved did you ever play the Genesis game Spider-Man versus the Kingpin?
Yes.
There's a little mechanic in that, which is that it costs you money to get web fluid, and the way you make money is by taking photos during missions. And I'm not saying I want that specific menu here, but like, or mechanic here, but there was something about that even as a little kid, I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, Spider-Man's broke. Like, Spider-Man has to pay for web fluid. He doesn't just get infinite web fluid for free. And there were ways that maybe they could have added that side of Peter Parker as just a broke 20-something
right.
to the game's mechanics that would have helped. Instead of it, the mechanic side is just like a flat linear power growth. You know, like, you just get better and better and better. There's no customization.
You're not building like my version of Spider-Man. By the end of the game, if you're
going to get all these
in
abilities.
A meaningful amount of the side stuff, you're going to have like the vast majority of things you're going to be able to get. 3/4
And don't get me wrong, like, the suits
skins.
Are cool. Getting different skins are cool. Sure. Getting the suit powers are neat. Like you, I'm not finding that I need to engage with most of them. I've kind of picked a handful that I like, and that's kind of all I need.
I switch it mostly because I'm like, oh, I guess there's 2 new ones. Like, I'll try
one of these for a while.
Different.
I put on, like, the Scarlet Spider suit for a while when...
Is that the one that has, like, the 4, like, arms that come out of it?
No, I've not got that one yet. Scarlet Spider was a different character that was in... There's a clone. It's a whole thing in the comics. Uh-huh. But I'm such a child of the 90s because I still think the Scarlet Spider outfit looks dope. It's the one that has, like, a sleeveless hoodie. It's like a blue sleeveless hoodie.
Oh, that one. Yeah, I did that one for, like, 2 hours.
Yeah, that's why I put it on last night because I was like, Spider-Man's having trouble making rent. Maybe he just has his old hoodie that he put on over a red bodysuit. Trying to make reasons for things. You know who I am. But I guess the other side of that is, the other thing about the kind of political nature of the game that you just kind of touched on is that sometimes you can look at that, you know, there's a kind of a popular, it's not a meme in the comedy sense, but it's a meme in terms of, like, information that gets passed down and around over and over again of, like, ugh, Batman is a character who is a billionaire who fights mentally ill, who beats up the mentally ill, and because they challenge the status quo, right? Like, that is, like, a popular quick reading of Batman, which kind of elides a lot of stories that are more than that in Batman's history, but also has one of those sorts of, like, oh yeah, that's kind of true, isn't it? He's kind of a billionaire who could be investing in local infrastructure and in many stories chooses not to. And again, right. there are stories in which he does that. I want to be 100% clear that's a reduction of what the vast array
it's
of Spider-Man
just,
yeah, or
it's
of
the,
Batman
like,
comics
a foundational, like, sort of base to the character as opposed
right.
to every interpretation
and,
of the
and
character.
The most important and the most sorry no, no not the most important the most visible elements of those of Batman as a character, the films, the cartoon, and the games, you know, the majority of people are getting Batman through some secondary source, not just through the comics directly, probably haven't encountered that other type of Batman story. So it's super interesting to me to see this version of a Spider-Man story, of a superhero story, in which superheroes are constantly getting into trouble, and nearly because of the things you just said, like the trust in the ability for bad people to do good things or to come back around, putting other people at risk, but also just relying on the city for things, relying on sanitation department, like working with a local cop instead of just taking it all into your own hands. And there's like a double bind there. Because on one hand, I think it's great that Spider-Man isn't just like, as someone with great power, I've self-elected myself to fight people and decide what's good and what's bad. On the other hand, he is so corny sometimes, Patrick. Like, mm-hmm. his love of the police chief, his hatred of drug dealers in this mm-hmm. very dare way is like, he's like straight up says like, my favorite thing in the world is putting drug dealers behind bars or something like that. And it's like, all right, yeah, but you know that this is like a racialized crime that has like, there's different, you know, Spider-Man, you're smarter than this. I guess you went through the STEM program. I guess that's, but like, there's yeah, definitely there, an element where he's such a man like, of the establishment, you know?
Yes. And I think that's, you know, part of what the game plays into a lot, but also it could be a little more self-aware of that, yes. Where like, I don't like, even if I, you know, my criticism of Peter Parker's approach to dealing with supervillains and like, you know, deferring to the good side of everybody over and over is a problem. Like, he's still probably smart enough to like recognize like the racial yes. injustice and like, in like the crime system. And it seemed the kind of thing where the game didn't have to like, you know, get hand, you know, like, you know, preachy about it, but there could have been ways that it made the character aware of that, especially because when he's, one thing I will say is like, this is not a like homogenous white New York, right?
No,
like you go 100%. Around in the crowd, you see like the characters you interact with, like there's
major
a wide spread,
people,
like
people of color, like yes. super important characters from the jump of this game are characters of color. Yeah.
So it does seem like, okay, like enough thoughtfulness was like, okay, to manage that, but then could have been a little bit of, I mean, you know, I think that's part of that's sort of the danger you get into. And it's like, hey, we're going to try and tell a more serious, grounded right. story that's going to deal with, it's not just going to be Peter Parker fighting, you know, the fucking Scorpion
Electro
or the Kingpin,
or whatever,
like,
Scorpion, right?
Like, it's not just going to be the high-end, high-concept, like, a part of this character. Like, we're going to, like, talk about everyday New Yorkers. And like, yep. All right, well, you've opened that door. The door is open. It's like, even if I could have criticized you for not, like, walking it further in the original version, at least I can be like, well, it's not even trying to do that. And so,
right.
like, I can kind of hand wave it away. But in this version of the story, it's like, well, all right.
No, it's clearly
if you're
going to
do this, then you've got to, there's a little more follow through on this. Or at least you open yourself up at the very least yeah. to critique for, like, being a little too cute about, or the character's cuteness runs into contrast with, like, the seriousness with which you're taking other elements of the story and the presentation of characters and the setting and
right.
things like that.
Can I ask a very basic question, which is
yes.
like, Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming, the film that came out last year, 2 years ago now,
yeah.
Set a very young and very naive, but still very excitable Peter Parker, and set a world that felt unique because of its position in the MCU, right? Like, this is in that film, for instance, Vulture has the abilities that Vulture has because of the fight from Avengers 1, right?
Right.
Avengers 1 happens. It's a great opening sequence in which Michael Keaton's character gets kind of put out of work because of the rise of kind of super heroic and super villainous technologies that require a very specific sort of handling from contractors. And so suddenly it's like, well, we're going to use this group called Damage Control that's approved by Stark to deal with all of the supervillain shit. And so, you know, the Vulture decides, like, fuck that. We can use this stuff to make money. And it's great. And there's little touches of that here or there. Like, there's clearly the Marvel world is here. You can find Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum and as you mentioned, I don't know if that was to me or to this in the review, you know, Spider-Man will say, ah, something seems a little strange here. You can find Avengers Tower. You can find, you know,
There are characters who will make a reference, like, oh, I fought the Avengers.
Yes.
Things like that. They're trying to think what else. I don't want to like spoil specific moments, but like it's strange because it like it nods that there are other things out there without actually engaging with it. Like it's like a weird middle ground where it's like, all right, look, if you're not Fireman's not going to show up at the end, that's fine. But it's like a little strange that he's existing on his own and like wouldn't call in for like there's, it's like he doesn't exist in a world where like people haven't noticed what he's up to at this point.
Right. Like, I mean, some of my favorite Marvel stuff ever is when one of these characters shows up in another comic book as just like a bit player, like, and again, maybe this does happen here or there. Like, I truly don't know, but like, there's a moment in Daredevil where in a Daredevil comic where Spider-Man shows up to be like, yo, you need to chill. And it's a great little conversation and it helps make those worlds feel bigger. Here, it feels so strange that all of those other characters are absent, but also it struck me as not quite being the same world as Homecoming. And I don't know what the licensing is on that stuff. I guess Sony still it makes the Spider-Man movies, right?
Yeah. I mean, I this is they've already said like outright that this is like not connected.
Its own world.
Yeah, it's its own. They're not outright calling it like an MGU or anything like that because the next major game will be published as a multi-platform game from Square Enix. It will probably have like absolutely nothing to do. Right. With this game. I don't know if that necessarily like prevents them from in the future, like, you know, incorporating other characters, but it wouldn't surprise me if Marvel wants to like dole out their characters to premier developers and they all kind of do their own
subversions, but still. Well, it's like one of the things that's like as the MCU becomes one big thing in a weird way, it makes it possible to kind of do it halfway and have it still sort of make sense, right? You know? Because like, you can have the Avengers Tower even if you don't need to actually put Iron Man in the game because somebody else has the Iron Man license, you know, or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, I don't – I guess my deeper question here is, like, coming from that movie and coming from Tom Holland's performance, what do you just think of this Peter Parker and this version of Spider-Man?
I liked it quite a bit, and I wasn't sure – because I really like Tom Holland's interpretation. I mean, partially because he acts as, like, a really – he's I think his acting is, like, really well done for that character. Like, he's just very charming and acts as a really good audience surrogate.
Right.
But that's, like – it's helped along because he's an audience surrogate, right? So he can the naivete of the character is you have some distance from it because he's just learning how to be Spider-Man. He's learning how to be this new version of himself, and so I actually think that like the acting, like more like sort of across the board in the game is like pretty well done. I think like specifically Peter Parker is good, and like specifically like Otto Octavius, like his like sort of new mentor.
Who's that? I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, I don't know. Some character in the.
Sorry. Yeah, that's yeah. It says here on my sheet, we're not allowed to say anything about Otto Octavius. So.
Yeah, he's a character. Okay. But hey, like the you know the the interaction between the two of them is I think like really it's not only is it good writing, but like it's like pretty decent performances.
Yeah, it's nice to have him have. I mean, in a year that's had God of War, another game about father son relationships. Like Otto as a surrogate dad
yeah,
is really, really good. There's a pride there that pops up from time to time in Peter's work and Peter's skill, and a flexibility, a sort of like, yeah, he's late for work again, but I'm sure it's for something important. Like that really resonated with me.
Yeah, I think generally the relationships sort of across the board are really well done. Like especially for a studio that hasn't done, you know, any. I mean, the Ratchet and Clank games have underrated writing. Like they were like pretty funny ass games that kind of got overlooked because they had, you know, it was a platformer, so you're not really looking for that stuff most of the time. But the writing in those games was pretty sharp. But this is sort of especially for the studio, like you know, they've really stepped up their game in a way that I was both surprised by relative to the past things they've worked on, and I just think it's a legitimately like touching good story with a nice arc to it. Both for what you expect from a comic book game and also just as like a piece of storytelling. And I think one of the things I touched in my review is that they are well aware of sort of genre expectations and partially probably rooted in our low expectations for the kind of stories in these types of games. And they do some really like fun sort of head fakes for players right. Where it's like, I know where the story is going to go. And then it does something different in a way that if you are aware of the tropes and a lot of the like storytelling that's happened in Spider-Man in the past, you'll kind of chuckle because like it's winking at you while also sort of pushing the story forward in a slightly different
Right, being a little direction. More clever than even you might think. There's definitely a lot
it's
of
clever
like,
without,
I know what
it's
this
not,
is.
It's not actually winking at you. It's right. just winking through the storytelling. I mean, I guess there's one moment where it really does kind of do that. But I don't know. It didn't feel over the top. Like, it felt like it was accomplishing both at the same time.
Totally. All right. I think maybe on that note, do you have anything else you want to add about Spider-Man besides people should go read your review over on the website?
Yeah,
I guess
no,
you just
I
heard
think,
it, so maybe they've already yeah, heard what you think.
It's good. I'm surprised how much I liked it. And I'm it was as I mentioned at the end of the review, as much as I'm interested to see what they do with this foundation in the future, with sort of like the open world and like the weaker elements of the game, I'm also just genuinely interested in the fallout of the storytelling decisions that they made, because it in some ways sets up like some dynamics that could feel pretty different for
right.
Spider-Man games in the past. So it's like if they're being that interesting this early, given that they're, you know, everything's a trilogy these days.
Sure is.
You know, that makes me excited for the future. And I guess I would like offhandedly mention if all you do is listen to this is like, I guess it's mentioned in my review, but like, you know, like Miles is a character in this. Don't assume too much. I think I explained to someone on Twitter. I was like, there's more than you think and less than you want.
Than you hope, yeah. Yeah, I've seen one scene with him, and it was actually a couple scenes, I guess, actually, and I really enjoyed them. I took screenshots because of how good I think his facial expressions are at communicating a lot about how he feels in the given moment. I'm happy to see more of him. You know, obviously, I am someone who wants to see Miles get more screen time.
He has a particularly one of my favorite exchanges, and I couldn't get into it because it would be too spoilery to explain what happened. But he has a particularly good exchange with a character.
I think I know the exact sequence you're talking about, and it's
which just really pushes
good.
Back on some bullshit. Like what I was saying before about
I literally have screenshots of that sequence.
Yeah,
not even because of the words, because his facial his mm-hmm. delivery on the lines mm-hmm. are like, oh word, yeah, okay, oh yeah, you want to tell me some shit? All right, yes. Yeah, okay. It's so good. So much shade. I love it so much.
It's so much shade, and it harkens back to what I was saying before about, again, like the game not being like capital P political, but like
right.
being well aware of the tropes of Spider-Man's ideology and like pushing back on that in what I thought were like really smart ways and occasionally like really profoundly emotional ways. And at this point, yes, the scene that both of us are alluding to like was one of those like, oh shit moments where it was like the writers were being very smart, aware, and like keying in on things where it's like, oh, okay, like not only are they telling a Spider-Man story, like they're aware that they're telling a Spider-Man story and they're aware that a lot of Spider-Man stories have been told. And yeah, that's a really satisfying moment in the game in a game that has, I think, at least a handful of those that are kind of just as powerful. So.
My only last two thoughts. One, I like this game a lot. I would like it a lot more if I didn't live in New York City. I think it does good job. It does a good job of the thing that happens sometimes when playing games that take place in cities I've lived in, like New York or LA, is that like you'll catch something out of your eye and it'll give you this sense of like pushing you out of your own brain, because you're like, whoa, where am I? Wait a second, am I at like where the place I used to work? Because like one of my first New York jobs, the building that it's in is just straight up in this game, or like, you know, parks I've been to, or you know, City Hall. Like there are moments when you're like swinging and something catches you at the corner of your eye and you're like, whoa, that's that place. But the actual layout of the city has a, you know, I understand you have to mesh it. You have to like mold it a little bit. You have to like move it around until it's something that makes sense and is a fun playground. I think it's a great playground. But they put like Times Square to the east of Madison Square Garden. It's to the north of Madison Square Garden. Like, and it's close enough that you maybe only put it a block or two north in the game versus in real life where it's like, you know, 8 blocks to the north. But they put it to the east by a couple of blocks and it's the most confusing thing in the world. I as being someone in New York feel like, oh yeah, okay, something's popping off up at Times Square. I know how to get there real quick. Boom, I just go. And no, that's not how you go there in the game. It doesn't make any sense, Patrick. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm sorry.
Last thing I'll say about this game is I found my favorite fake tweet from it. which is Randall_E on whatever the fake Twitter is called, says, "Get real, NYC. Spider-Man is just another tool of corporate oppression." And then Jesse36 says, responds twice in a row, first, "But Spider-Man helped take down Fisk, one of the ultimate corrupt corporate leaders." And then follows up again by saying, "Lol, he blocked me," which is the most online response from Jesse36. "Lol, he blocked me."
Good.
Thank you for knowing how Twitter works.
That's great.
All right, I think that's going to do it for us. We'll be back with another regular episode on Friday. I'm not sure what the topic will be yet. Danielle is out on a well-earned break day. And if you haven't heard it yet, you should check our feed to listen to our PAX West episode of Waypoint Radio. That was a really good episode, so make sure to go back and listen to that one. Also, as always, you can follow everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, waypoint.vice.com. You follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Patrick?
You can find me at Patrick Klopik.
All right. Again, we'll be back on Friday with more. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And as always, I'd love to hear your thoughts about Spider-Man. So put those over on discourse.zone, our forums, where you can reply to Patrick's review and presumably talk about the game as it comes out. When is it actually out?
Thursday.
7th. Weird day to release a game. So check for it then. We'll do a stream probably on Thursday to show off some stuff. That seems like a thing we'll do. That seems like us. So look forward to that. Until then, peace.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.